Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you for your prayer, because honestly, I speak quite a lot, and people often say to me, do you get nervous before you speak? And I can honestly say I don't, but I get very nervous after I speak. So tonight, I will lie in bed at night wondering if I said anything that hurt, offended, or anything. The last thing I want to do is anyone to leave tonight feeling condemned, feeling more overwhelmed, feeling like they've parented badly or anything like that, because we are on this journey together. And the fact that we are sitting here on a Monday night is super encouraging to me. It means that the tide is turning. And it means that we as a generation of parents are seeing devices, seeing the online space for what it is, something incredible, something powerful, but something that our children need help navigating. And so thank you for coming. As Mark said, I have a family back in Durbs, so if you can just put that first slide up, please. These are my people living the life in Cape St. Francis. That's my husband, Brad. We've been married for 21 years this year. And those are my children, Emily, who is 16, and Blake and Ryan, who are 14. So some Gen X's raising some Gen Z's. And I love social media. I love my phones. In fact, before I sat down, I took a little video of the auditorium, and I just typed to our family chat, here I go, ready or not, and I got this big message in capital letters with millions of exclamation marks saying, go mom! So we love what social media is and how it does keep us connected. But as we come together tonight, it is to focus on one of the most problematic areas of the online space, of devices, and that is the impact on our children's sexuality. Now, we've always got to start these conversations and this evening by saying, and I love saying this to teenagers because they always applaud me, so I hope you feel the same, is sex is great. Okay. So the teenagers are like, whoa! So finally someone's telling us that it's not like the worst thing in the world and whatever. So it's great. It's wonderful. It is a gift to humanity. It is something that is part of the human story. When we look at it as a gift that it is, and just the incredible ways that it connects us and what it does for us, it is a really, really good thing. But it is something that parents really struggle to talk about for many different reasons. Mostly because our parents didn't talk to us. So those baby boomers did not talk to the Gen X's about sex, pretty much cross-culturally. Some cultures were more liberated than others in this space, you know, kind of our northern European, Scandinavian countries, they're much more open about sex. But for a lot of us, our parents just didn't talk to us about it. And also sometimes our experiences of sex, you know, maybe the way we encountered sex, the way we learned about sex, things that are in our past can make it really, really scary to talk to our children about it. And sometimes we also let fear stop us from talking to our children about sex. Fear that if we do talk about them, they're going to want to go and experiment. I want to just tell you that is the exact opposite is true. When children have a healthy understanding of sex, when they know what it is, when they know that it's worth protecting, they are much less likely to go and look online for stuff, go and find their answers elsewhere because they're getting their answers from you. So foundationally, sex is a good thing. Human relationships and attraction is a healthy, good thing. And as our children move into puberty and their bodies mature, the fact that they are attracted to other people, the fact that they're curious about sex, it's part of their human story. It's part of growing up. And it's a good thing. But it's how we navigate that, how we keep them safe in that space in a digital world that we're here to talk about tonight. And one thing is for sure. We cannot parent this generation like our parents parented us. We can't say what so many baby boomers said, they'll find out how they found out. I was okay, they'll be okay. Because that world no longer exists. The world where you find out from an older sibling or on the playground or worst case scenario from Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that. That doesn't exist. Or maybe a Scope magazine with stars on the boobs. That world does not exist anymore. Our children are growing up in a highly sexualized world. And our society is obsessed with sex. We are both super casual about it, and we are all consumed by it. And so it's this weird thing that it's a thing that we idolize, a thing that we think about, but also something that we kind of minimize. And so the average teenagers, if you can put the next slide up, please, is exposed to about 15,000 sexual references a year, which equates to about 1,000, over 1,000 a month, a teenager will see something to do with sex. Obviously not explicit sex, but something to do with sex. And so it is everywhere. It is in songs, it is in movies. What was once deemed pornography is now on Netflix. And if you're going to do one thing when you go home tonight, please go and put parental controls on your Netflix. I know that the vast majority of parents don't do this because I ask children when I go and speak to them. But so many, I had the mom of a six-year-old girl come to me 2 weeks ago to say that her child had been watching a series on Netflix called Sex Life. And not only was she watching it, she was acting it out. And so it is everywhere. It's really, really easy for our children to come across sex. There is porn on Spotify. There is sex inside Roblox. There's a whole world of naked Roblox within the game of Roblox. There exists a porn version of pretty much every game that exists. They also often come across it in group chats, WhatsApp groups. There's a lot of sharing of videos, of memes. Do you know you can even make porn stickers for WhatsApp now? And so it's pretty much everywhere. Sometimes they're exposed to it by clicking on links. Often, a lot of children come across sex by accident. They're searching for something else completely, and then they come across it. There are links embedded in YouTube comments that take our children to sexual content. There are pop-up ads. Often our children are exposed on other people's devices, in other homes of older siblings. I see children who grow up in estates are the ones who get exposed to porn because parents kind of have this sense of security and allow their children to roam more freely than they would if they lived in a freestanding home. And so we often see children exposed to sexual content in and around those estates. We see them exposed through messages, grooming, we're going to talk about that later, and lots of different platforms. But today I just want to talk through some of the kind of contexts and situations that our children are exposed to sexual content online. And then I want to go into some of the really practical ways that we can help them in this space. And of course, tonight we've got parents of all ages. So we've got some parents of really little kids who from tonight, you can go and just put some amazing foundations in place and boundaries in place for as your children grow. But there may be those whose children are older, and you've already so far down the road in terms of your child having a phone and kind of what the rules are, or lack of rules, or lack of boundaries, and it's just going to be a case of kind of where can I make some changes. And so I don't want anyone to feel overwhelmed, to feel condemned. I do this for a living, and I'm constantly revisiting how we do things in our home. For example, my children got phones at the end of primary school in the last few weeks of primary school, and then they got their first app halfway through grade 8. They got Instagram, and then my daughter got Snapchat halfway through grade 9. And I recently had to break the news to Blake and Ryan that they're not getting Snapchat halfway through grade 9. It was a really bad idea. And so they're going to wait until they're a bit older. And also because I've realized that often it's girls who are sending the nudes. It's not the boys asking. It's the girls sending them to get the boys' attention. And my daughter was sent a nude within 3 months of having Snapchat. And even she said it was like a bit weird. And I looked at it for a few seconds and it was like, oh my gosh, that's gross. And she deleted it and blocked the guy. But let's be honest, it's not really going to, let's just not go there. But with boys, I think they need a little bit more protection for a little bit longer, just because of how anatomy works. some of the ways that we're exposed to online sex. So one of the ways is online relationships. You know, we used to be able to go, okay, my child's not dating till they're 16. But as soon as you give your child a device, you don't know if they're dating or not. Because a whole lot of the dating and flirting and chatting happens on phones. Some young couples will never meet and will tell you that they had a girlfriend or a boyfriend online. And so it's no more like passing notes in class. It's now snapping people. And it's just kind of really complicates things. And so in some ways, you know, I have lots of conversations with teenagers about this. In some ways, it's actually fun. You know, this idea that you can meet someone at the beach and then you can chat to them. And, you know, but there are some pitfalls to this. There's a lot of pressure that comes with being connected, and relationships can escalate quite quickly. And often children and teenagers will say and do things online they would never say and do face to face. And so because they're sitting in an anonymous setting in their bedroom, and if you can put that next slide up, please, this is just shows you, sorry, the next one. Is there's a lot of intensity to online relationships when a couple is, you know, you've got an online boyfriend or girlfriend. There's this intensity to keep in touch. And so you can imagine that a lot of those conversations also happen late at night, in a bedroom, by yourself. And so our children are often exposed to sexual content through this. And in the same survey, it said 23% of teenagers said they blocked or unfriended someone after flirty messages made them feel uncomfortable or harassed. And so sometimes there's unsolicited stuff that gets sent and things can escalate. And then there are the dreaded nudes. These are one of the things that strike fear into my heart and into a lot of parents' hearts, because it is becoming so common, those naked, you know, the sending of naked pictures. And it's becoming younger and younger and younger. I speak into primary schools. Last year in Durban North, where I live, a boy was expelled for having a nude. He was in grade 7 on his phone. But this happens often, and our children don't actually realize the severity of it. And there's a lot of pressure to do it and the normalization of it. One of my sons, he had been at the school where they go, the boys' high school where they go, for 3 months when he was shown a nude next to the hockey field while he was waiting for hockey. It's a phone-free school, but they get their phones in the afternoon. And this little boy had his phone out and he said, look at my cat, look at my dog, look at my girlfriend. And he showed this full nude of a 13-year-old girl to the other boys next to the hockey field. My boy and some of his friends, I think they got such a fright, they jumped up and walked away. And then when I got there to fetch him, he jumped in the car and he told his sister, and then he told me, and we were able to process it. But this is not uncommon. This is really not uncommon. And it is quite something for a teenage boy to be exposed to, because the normal reaction is one of pleasure. It's attractive. It's the endorphins shoot into your brain, the dopamine hits the pleasure center of your brain, your prefrontal cortex is very underdeveloped at that age, which means that you're not prone to making wise decisions. Your amygdala, which sits at the back here, responsible for passion, for emotion, for desire, that's growing incredibly quickly. And so you have this underdeveloped brain in the prefrontal cortex part. So if you want to equate it to a car, it's like having a Ferrari with an amazing accelerator and terrible brakes. That is what the teenage brain is. And that's what it's meant to be. That's why a boy will look at a house in a swimming pool and go, I wonder if I can jump from there into there. And we'll do it. It's because that's how the brain works. And so when they now have access to phones and these kinds of things happen, it makes sense as to why they often, you know, we'll look at nudes, we'll share nudes, we'll get caught into this space. And then there's also this growing idea, you know, I've heard teenage girls say, I don't mind if there's nudes out there of me as long as they're good ones. Where this idea of long-term consequences is not there. And so this is becoming increasingly common. But the reality is, with nudes, is they're there forever. We know this. We know that once a nude is out there, it is there forever. I spoke to a girl the other day who was in a high school, and she had sent a nude to a guy that she was talking to. This is also, you got to know Gen Gen Z speak, talking, vibing, dating. It's like complicated. There's no like ask someone out and they're your girlfriend. It's like you have to be talking first before you dating. So they were talking, which means there's something but not something committed. And she had sent him a picture of her boobs. And then they had stopped talking. And then he'd seen her at a party a few weeks later. And he had come up to her and said, hey, I've still got that pic on my phone. And she said to me, well, how can I get it back? I said, well, there's no way of getting it back. And so that kind of long-term consequence is not there. And then the reality of the law is that a naked picture of a child under the age of 18 is child pornography. And this is what a lot of our young people don't understand, is that the moment they take a picture of their own naked body, they create child pornography, and then they distribute child pornography by sending it to one person, and then they're in possession of child pornography if they have it on their phone. And so there's consequences for the child. But then on top of that, a child cannot own a phone until they're 18 years old, which means that the phone belongs to you as the parents. Because contractual law states that you can't sign a cell phone contract until you're 18. And so then you're in possession of child pornography as well, as the parents. And so this has really, really big consequences for us as families. So nudes are very real. They are very prevalent. And then the next way they're often exposed is through what we call catfishing, sextortion, and grooming. For those of you who don't know what catfish are, it's when someone pretends to be someone else online with the intention of getting something from that person. This is rife. I deal with this all the time. And it is on, if you can put the next slide up, please. I don't know if you guys have heard of Omegle, but it recently got banned. So Omegle is one of many, many apps in the world where you can just talk to random strangers. And this one just got banned last year because there is so much sexual exploitation happening on it. But there are sites like this all over the internet, and I know lots of teenagers who log on them just to talk to strangers. And so often it'll happen on places like this. Discord, which we'll speak about just now, is one of the most used spaces for this kind of behavior. But then also good old WhatsApp and Instagram direct messaging, where adults pretend to be children. And we were just having a conversation about super sports schools, which I'm sure some of you are aware of, film our children's sports on a Saturday morning. And so this is a real life example of a boy that I helped a little while ago. Is someone messaged him on a Sunday, said, wow, you had such a good game yesterday. Well done, I was at the school watching. And it was this beautiful girl. And then they started this conversation, and you know, it kind of progressed over the course of time, because sexual groomers are very, very clever in how they get our children to a point of getting sexual content from them. And then for the sake of time, he got this girl got him to send her nudes, got the guy to send her nudes, and as soon as he'd sent them, she disappeared. She never existed. She was some kind of blackmailer, and a message came a few hours later, give me this amount of money or I'll start releasing your pictures. And I help boys with cases like this all the time. Emma Stadler, who's our top social media lawyer in South Africa, she said she deals with 6 of these a day in South Africa, where our children send nudes to someone who doesn't exist and then they are extorted. But also, you know, it's not only just, you know, sending these things and getting money for them. Sometimes these images are uploaded onto porn sites and income is generated like that. There's loads of different ways that this content is used. But where predators used to hang out in the parks, they now hang out on children's apps. That's the bottom line. Where predators go, where children are. Children are on YouTube. Children are on are playing Fortnite, and so the predators are there. And so often children and the predators use sexual content to groom the children. So that is one way our children are exposed. And then a lot of the content that our children are exposed to in terms of sex is just social media. So if you can put that slide up, please. Here are just some examples of social media. These are all, a lot of people say to me, my child has a tablet, but they don't have social media. Or my child has a PSP, but he doesn't have social media. If your child games, has any form of contact online with any other human, they have social media. And there is sexual content on every single one of these. I could tell you firsthand accounts of children exposed to sexual content through these. If you can put the next slide up, please. I just saw this today, so I wanted to share it with you because this just happened. So Fight the New Drug is an outstanding organization fighting against pornography. And they, every year, the Center for Sexual Exploitation releases what they call the Dirty Dozen. So basically the 12 worst companies who are allowing sexual exploitation. And these two companies are in that 12. Apple and Discord. There's so much that these companies need to be doing to protect our children that they're just not doing. So if you think that the App Store age restriction on these things is there and keeping your child safe, it's not. Apple is not doing a lot to keep your child safe, and Discord is literally a playground for pedophiles. And so we really need to be aware of those spaces. And so often, even if our children are not exposed to pornography, The social media space is shaped by pornography. It's shaped by our sexual culture. And so TikTok, a little while ago, I was helping a boy who was addicted to pornography, and I was consulted some experts, and they said the first thing he needs to do is get TikTok off his phone. TikTok is the gateway to porn for many, many boys. I have seen the sexual content firsthand on there. It is hidden, it is clever, but it is there. And also, what is kind of some of the challenges, some of the trends that are on there are shaped by pornography. Sorry, I don't want to say these things with little people in the room, so I'll just move on. But in that space, so let's go to the next slide, please. I just want to show you these guys. So this guy, who's this guy, Gen Z's? Asher Speed, okay. Your 10 to 12-year-old sons adore him. They adore him, okay? And this is him with his tongue out looking at a girl's butt. Okay, this is from a video called 20v1, 20 women and one man in a room, and it was on, can you put the slide of the Sidemen up? I can't remember if it's before or after. So this is just more of him doing what he's doing. But I think there's one of the group of guys, if it's there. Anyway, more of Speed being gross. And this guy is one of the most influential YouTubers at the moment. And this is what our sons are seeing as normal and the way to treat women. He was on with these other group of really big YouTubers called Sidemen. Do you remember Prime? You know, when grown women were fighting other grown women in supermarkets to buy a toxic drink for 45 rand for their 12-year-old sons? We remember it with shame in our hearts. Yes. Okay. So those guys own Prime, and they made you do that. But Speed was on this, and basically woman after woman came into this room with him, and the whole thing was for him to see which one he wanted to take on a date. And every single one, and I actually had to watch this video in installments because I was so horrified by it. And as each woman came into the room and he interacted with them, I had one thought in my mind. Please let my sons never treat a woman like this. But when our children are online, even when they're just watching the most popular influencers right now, they are learning stuff. And what they're learning from Speed is that women are objects. And they are there for my sexual pleasure. And the heartbreaking part was when you went to backstage and interviewed some of the women, they were saying stuff like, I'm just going to show them my boobs. So they were objectifying themselves. And so the online space and the narrative right now that I'm seeing come through with women and men is that men objectify women. It's this idea of that's just how men are, which I don't believe. It's just kind of what our culture is saying. And so the women are being, oh, well, if they're going to objectify me, I may as well objectify myself. So that's why we have a lot of girls sending unsolicited nudes to boys. It's not the boys begging the girls for the nudes. It's often the girls trying to get the guy's attention with the nude because they're seeing that kind of behavior and thinking, well, this is how men and women interact. And so a lot of it is just about worldviews and values, actually. And then we have, you know, the next level of toxic influences like our Andrew Tates, who, you know, are having a, I mean, I fight till I'm blue in the face with 14-year-old boys about Andrew Tate and all his amazing life advice on how to get different color Bugattis and, you know, how to rule the universe and get the universe to give you what it owes you and all that garbage. And then if your girlfriend won't do what you want, you just give her one. You know, and he just slips that in there with all of his life advice. So he's got all of these young boys listening to him. He's making money off them and he's normalizing sexual violence. So there's a lot of sexual content in the online space and a lot of sexual content on social media. And then, of course, there's pornography. I don't have time to spend a lot of time talking about pornography, but this is, I think, the fight of this generation. This is the fight that the Gen Zs have to win for the Alpha Gen, because this, unfortunately, something that we have given Gen Z as the battle that they are fighting. And right now, they're not winning. Because about 89 to 90% of young adults believe that porn is okay. But about two-thirds of divorces in the US right now are attributed to porn use or porn addiction. Erectile dysfunction in men has gone up from 3% to 33% just since internet porn existed. We are having a generation of young people who don't know how to have healthy, normal sex because they have been broken by being exposed to pornography through their formative teenage years. So can you put those stats up for us, please? Just a couple of numbers for those who are number nerds like me. The average age a South African child is exposed is 11. There was a study that came out this year that said 10, so it's somewhere between the two. 57% of teens search out porn at least monthly, and 80% of porn is viewed on a phone. Next one, please. 73% of teens have viewed porn. This is another study by Common Sense Media. 41% said they'd viewed porn at school. And 44% said they'd viewed porn on school-owned devices. Kids are clever. If you can put the next one, this is just my research that I did last year with a group of grade 9 boys. Sorry about that. But look at this. We have only 15%, 35 kids, the blue one, who hadn't seen it. And then most of them were here, 120, they've seen it. But then we had 52 of them who said they watched it sometimes. These are boys who are 14 or 15. Sometimes. Like, I eat sushi sometimes. I don't know how often sometimes is. But then we have 5% of them who said, I watch it regularly. And then I had 8 boys out of the 242 who said they thought they were addicted. And 16 of them who said they used to watch but stopped. This is a problem for these boys. They are watching porn. And these stats are the same inside and outside the church, by the way. They're just often better hidden inside the church than outside the church. But our children are being exposed to porn on school buses, on school tours, at break time at school, on the school computer in the library, all sorts of things. And this is a problem for a couple of reasons. And I don't have time to go into a lot, but I'll just tell you a couple of the big ones. Number one, it's teaching our children that violent sex is good sex. About 90% of porn is violent in nature, and it teaches our children to do the same. So what are we seeing? An increase in sexual violence amongst teenagers. Boyfriends strangling their girlfriends, spitting on their girlfriends, punching their girlfriends, thinking that this is what sex is. And then we have the girls thinking that this is what they need to do, and so they're putting up with it. And so we're seeing this increase in sexual violence. We're seeing this normalization. Anyone heard of No Nuts November? I know the millennials have, don't lie. So this is a challenge for young men to not masturbate for the whole of November. It's this idea that you have to watch porn and masturbate because that's what's healthy. And then you give it a go for 1 month to see if you can do it. It's no longer growing a mustache. It's like a whole nother level of Movember has just been downgraded. But what they're going to see on the screen is going to be so unhealthy. So I saw another study today that said that the most used word in the title of porn videos is teen. So child pornography is the most watched genre of pornography. There is a move to change the word pedophile to minor attracted person. Because this is what porn is normalizing in our culture. Porn with sex with children. It is normalizing all sorts of devastating things for our children. I'm going to move on. I have a whole talk on my website called Zero Shades of Grey, all about porn. If you want to go, you can listen to it, but just take my word for it. There is nothing good, nothing positive, nothing healthy for porn, for children, adults, anyone in between, but especially for our children. It is deeply, deeply traumatizing for our children. Okay, so there is sex everywhere. There is all sorts of kinds of sex everywhere, but what can we do to help these precious children of ours? And there is so much we can do. So the first thing that I want to encourage you, if you can put the next slide up, please, is to be present. This is one of the best things. Oh, sorry, you can go past all of those. You can look at them if you want, but I just don't have time to go into them, so I won't. Next one. Am I fine? Okay, so you can go back if you want. Just go back to those. Let me just spend a little bit of time on them. I just don't like to leave the good stuff too late. Well, let's maybe just spend just a few more minutes just talking about the pornography, because what it is doing to our children, if you can just, sorry, Johan, you're having like a night, eh, with me, is that what it shows is often dangerous. A lot of what our children see is dangerous. It's immoral, it's unethical, and it's nothing like the beautiful thing that sex is meant to be. You know, it'd be one thing if our children were seeing beautiful, healthy, consensual, loving sex, but they're not. They're not. They are, and there is so much out there. You know, at its heart, Playboy magazine had about 15 million subscribers, and the magazine would go in a plastic thing to the person's house. Now, Pornhub has about 140 million visitors a day, and that's just one site that is kind enough to give us their data. Most don't. And Pornhub, interestingly, are the ones who kind of took porn to kind of a pop culture status. You even see people walking around with caps and all sorts of things, and they were part of making porn normal. But last year, they were prosecuted for having non-consensual content on their website and actual rape videos and actual abuse videos. And they were taken to court and they were found guilty. And they had to take down about 10 million videos that were actual rapes and actual sexual abuse and children. And so what our children will see is deeply traumatizing. And there is a high correlation between children who are exposed to porn and sexual deviance and sexual promiscuity and things as adults, because it's kind of, underdeveloped brains are so susceptible. If you can put the next slide up, please. And I think this is just encouraging, even with talking to your children, is that porn harms our brains. I've spoken a little bit into that, into the fact that it wires your brain. So we know that porn consumption generally, specifically with, so boys will generally watch porn because they're curious or because their friends are doing it or they think it's what they should be doing. And it will often be coupled with masturbation. And so what happens to our teenage boys' brains in this process is that their brains get trained into thinking that sex is something I do with myself. It's something that I do stimulated by another person, and but on my own in a bedroom. It's not a relational thing. And then what it also does is it spikes, because it's such shocking content, and there's something called the porn's arms race, which is producing ever more extreme content, because porn is so highly addictive. It works like other drugs, that users of porn will not get the same high and satisfaction from the same video they watched this time. They need something more. They need something more extreme. And so it just gets worse and worse. And so there's just this incredible thing that it's doing to our children's brains, where by the time they reach adulthood and, you know, they try to have normal, healthy sex with an imperfect human being, it just doesn't do it for them. And they're just not interested. And that's why we see so many broken relationships and marriages and things like that. And so it also harms our relationships. It harms the way we see people. That's why men who watch pornography are much more likely to beat their wives. You know, boys who watch pornography are much more likely to try and do violent things with their partners or want to do things like that because it is what is being taught to them. And because it is such a hyperstimulus, those neuro pathways in your brain are getting formed by what you're seeing. And remember, it's such a young, impressionable brain. And for a lot of these children, it's their first exposure to sex. So this is them getting taught what sex is. And then the world, it is doing awful things to the world. Increase, as I said, in teen sexual violence. We're seeing an increase in child-on-child sexual violence. Some of you may have seen the article that was in the newspaper earlier this year of a preschool in America where a 5-year-old boy made a little girl do a sex act on another boy, and he filmed it with the school iPad. And they were caught doing this. And that scenario comes out of porn. It comes from being exposed to porn. And we're seeing increases in children being the perpetrators of sexual violence and sexual assault on other children. Like this little girl who was exposed to sex life. She didn't know. She had been sexualized through what she'd seen, and so was then acting that out on the people around her. And so for our young people, it is shaping a lot about their ideas, their expectations, and their experiences. If you can just put that that little slide up about from the village, please, from online. And this was just, some of you may belong to this awesome Facebook group. I love it. I get a lot of advice from it. And this is just someone saying, I need your help. Today my son came to me and told me he's addicted to porn. He's in his early 20s and went on to say he's watched porn from the age of 14 and is unable to have normal sex with girls of his age. It does not satisfy him. OMG, addiction is very hard to deal with for the most part, but sexual addiction. You start off watching girls in bikinis and you end up in some very dark places, damaged and scared, unable to go back to a place of normalcy or innocence. And we see this trajectory quite often, where the boys don't start off looking for porn. They go onto Instagram, they see a girl in a bikini, they like the picture, they go and they look at more pictures, and because of algorithms are those little programs in the back of our social media that feed us more of what we like and what we enjoy, but not the same. It's got to have a little bit of a shock factor to it to keep us engaged. And so it will take us on a path. And so a boy who looks at girls in bikinis on Instagram will very quickly be on porn stars' Instagram pages and will very soon be getting links from OnlyFans pages for them to click on to get more content. And so just children who are in this very formative age of life where sexual curiosity is something so normal, so part of their journey, because of this access to the digital world, they being, you know, when I was sitting again with a 9-year-old and talking to her about the fact she had been watching porn, and she didn't know why, and she was in tears, and her mom had brought her, and we were talking it through. And it's almost like for our children, they're like these little fish swimming in the sea, and there's something interesting and that looks quite tasty, and they try it out, and inside is this big hook. And so it's not our children's fault that they've been exposed to this world. And for us as parents, it's kind of like we didn't know that this was what the world was going to look like online for our children, but we find ourselves here. We find ourselves in this place where our children have access to so much. So what can we do? There is so much. So take heart and be encouraged. And the very simple and easy first step is to be present in our children's online lives. You know, because we were unaware, a lot of us kind of gave devices to our children, allowed them to download the apps they wanted, allowed them the access that they wanted, and are now going, oh my goodness. I can't believe we found ourselves here, because it was almost like we opened a door into another world. Our children walked through it and then closed that door behind them. And we are left out here with our hearts racing, sweating, thinking, what is going on in there? But I don't know how to get inside that room now. And so what we need to do is we need to open that door. We need to get inside that room and find out what our children are doing in the online space. So what does that mean? What that means is, if you have young children, you need to be incredibly involved in their online lives. You need to like lock that thing down. you know, they shouldn't be online. They should only be watching stuff that you have pre-approved for them. Children under 3 should have absolutely no access to any devices. It does not help them in any way, even if it says educational in the title of the game. So, and if your children start having access to devices, please make sure that you limit the content that they watch, and that every device you give to your child has some kind of monitoring and filtering software on it. There are so many good ones. The one that I use, and it'll be up on the end, and I don't get financial incentive from this, it's just the one I use, because it costs 50 rand, 1.5 cappuccinos, not even anymore. And it covers my whole family's devices. It's called Safe Surfer. But there's lots like it. And it's basically you sign up, you open an account with them. There's Bark, there's Custodio, there's Family Link, there's lots of things. And then you put that app onto everyone's devices so that you can filter out some of the junk. It's almost like putting a seatbelt on your child before you start the car. And to just have that first line of defense for our children. What that does is it can filter out some of the websites. It should block all actual mainstream porn. It can alert you to any nudity. Bark has some amazing software where it'll actually alert you to any words around self-harm or depression or eating disorders or any of those kinds of things. You can limit time, you can limit apps. But when our children are small, we need to lock those things down. And then what it also means in terms of being present is boundaries and behaviors. So making sure that our children don't spend extended time on our devices. You know, like when you spend lots of time, especially if it's late at night and your parents have gone to sleep, that's when things sometimes go pear-shaped. So limited time, limited apps, where they can spend their time, boundaries about who they speak to. You know, young children should not be speaking to strangers at all. They shouldn't be gaming with strangers. They shouldn't be playing Fortnite or Roblox with strangers. They, just like you don't let your primary school age child play with strangers in the real world, we shouldn't be allowing them to play with strangers online. So we need to know who they're talking to, know who they're interacting with, and that we check. Every family should have an open phone, open device policy. We should have every single password of every single app. And you know what? When this is the norm from when your children are small, I can speak from experience. If this is the way you've always done things, it's the way you do things. And it just becomes your culture in your home. And often parents are like, but it's an invasion of their privacy. It's not an invasion of their privacy. It's just parenting. I don't know how to say that. Just like I don't leave my child's bedroom window open for anyone to jump in and talk to her, like I don't leave the window of her of their devices. So we open phone policy. I believe that everybody should have one person who can pick up their phone at any time and look at it, no matter who you are. Because if we have, you know, I often think of like Lord of the Rings, my precious. If you like that about your phone, my question is why? It's called accountability. And a lot of stuff that happens on devices is because there's no accountability. So the enemy has a field day because there's no one watching. And so for our children, knowing that we're there, that we know their passwords and that we will check their phone. And it's not about sneaking around late at night to check our kids' phones. My friend has this thing, I never really did it, but she did it. She would just walk past her kids and go like this. And they would have to put the device into her hand and she would go and have a little look at it and whatever. But we just have all of our devices charging downstairs every night. Devices don't live in bedrooms. And so every couple of nights, I'll just go onto their things. Most of the time, I look at a couple things. I look at DMs. I look at the For You page on Instagram to see what kinds of things my children are looking at, making sure it's surfing and soccer and that kind of thing. Because the For You page will tell you what kind of things your child is looking at. And then I'll just have a little browse through some of the WhatsApp groups. And we have a great understanding. I never open anything unless I'm worried. So I don't open their unopened snaps. I don't look at their Instagram stories. I don't open their messages unless there's a little red flag. So when I saw 20v1, 20 women and one man in a room, I opened that thing. Because a friend had sent it to Ryan on Instagram. And I'm going to open that thing because that's my job. When I see there's a suspect thing coming near my child, I'm going to protect them. And so checking and making sure your children know that this is just part of parenting. Talk to them about the law. Talk to them about the fact that you are legally responsible for this device. And so it actually is your responsibility. No phones in bedrooms, especially after bedtime. And honestly, if your thoughts right now is, yeah, but it's my child's alarm clock. Go old school. It's time to wake up for school. You know, like that's what I do. Or go to Checkers or Clicks and just get a little alarm clock. But take those phones out of their bedrooms. Honestly, most of the stories of what goes pear-shaped, it happened in a bedroom after parents had gone to bed. Because your brain is tired, your defenses are down, you've been talking for a long time, it's been escalating through the evening, there's kind of flirting that's gone on, and then often something happens. So have a charging station where everything goes. Don't give phones too early. It's, you know, we are part of the changing tide. We are part of a pioneering group of parents here tonight because it's changing. Yes, we used to give TikTok to 10-year-olds, but let's not do that anymore because it is not good for them. There's a new book, Jonathan Haidt just come out with his new book, Anxious Generation, and we're not talking about that tonight, but the data that's coming out of this first generation that's come through with digital devices and porn in their pockets is not pretty. And so don't be in a rush. This one boy I was talking to the other day, he's in grade 11, and he said to me, "Ma'am, why are you like so obsessed with phones and phone safety and stuff?" And I said, "My boy, because with boys, generally I'm worried about porn." And he just looked at me and was like, "Yo, ma'am, I had a phone, and in grade 6 and 7, I watched so much porn." He said, "My mom just gave me a phone. What was she thinking I was doing with it? I was like a boy, and I was curious." And so have boundaries about time, and we'll talk about that maybe just a little bit just now. Boundaries about WhatsApp groups. Be very, very careful what WhatsApp groups your children are on. You know, there was a WhatsApp group between two of our biggest private schools in KZN last year, the grade 9 boys from these two big, fancy, rich Midlands schools. I won't name them. But the purpose of this group was they would put up a picture of a girl, and they would all talk about her, what that girl let him do, what they think of her. She's fat, she's flat, she's a slut, she's this, she's that. And that's literally the purpose of the group. And lots of these kinds of spill the tea, gossip groups, anonymous posting, it all happens. So make sure your children are not on those spaces. And also make sure you know who has your child's number. I have a problem with sports coaches messaging my children. I don't know, it's just weird to me. Is it not weird to you that a random stranger has your child's phone number? So challenge your schools on these things. Challenge them on the fact that adults are allowed to direct message. We've seen, you know, there was that, we and I won't name schools, but there have been terrible sexual grooming happening just on WhatsApp. So make sure you know who's talking to your children on WhatsApp. Have ongoing conversations about this with your children. And then the second thing is instill values and identity in your children. This is like the internal rudder that keeps them safe. Knowing who they are. Because they need to have healthy attachment to you. They need to know what their values are. Does your family know what their values are? Are our children, do they know their identity, know their worth, so that when they go online, they don't need to send a nude for someone to tell them how precious they are? Talk about big topics that they're going to encounter online. Talk about gender. Talk about sex. Please, if your child has access to a device, talk to them about sex. There's something called the law of first mention. It's a psychological term. It means the first time you're exposed to something becomes your grid. So if the first time your child learns about sex, they learn from you with a book, whether it's mine or another book, that tells them that sex is something beautiful, something precious, something powerful, something worth waiting for, then when the toxic version, the faulty version comes, they go, no, wait a minute. That's my dad told me what sex is, and that's not what it is. And this works. I promise you, this is one of the best things we can do for our children. Talk about sex, and then talk about the big things. Talk about masturbation. Talk about porn. Talk about different kinds of sexual relationships. Be a good source of accurate information for your children. Make sure they know who they are. Talk about integrity, accountability. Are they the same person online and offline? Are they saying the same things to guys or to girls online that they're saying to their faces? What are their online and is there balance between their interactions online and offline? Talk to them about whether things are helpful. Because we often talk about right and wrong, but with teenagers, sometimes that doesn't always work, but is it helpful? Is it turning them? What I like to say to my children and to the teenagers I work with is, who are you becoming by what you are watching? Because there's a future self down there. There's a husband, there's a wife, there's an adult person. Is what I'm watching taking me to who I want to be, or is it taking me somewhere else? Where do they want to go? And then prepare them. Prepare them for what they're going to see. Talk to them about what exists in the online space. You know, when Blake was exposed to that nude next to the hockey field, and he told Emily, and then he told me, and you know, his sister had educated him on bra sizes, so he said, "Mom, I think she was a D." So I think it would have been like quite a surprise when he saw this picture. I was like, "Thanks, Emily." He is a detailed guy. But he said this to me, and this was like one of the most powerful statements I've heard, and I've said it over and over and over since then, is he said to me, "Mom, when I saw that picture, I was shocked, but I was not surprised." Because there's a difference between shock and surprise. Shock is, oh my gosh, that is sending messages into my brain and my body is kind of responding to it. But I know what to do in the situation because my mom told me. I get up, I walk away, and I go and tell someone. Surprise is this. It's like, what is this? No one's ever told me about this. I don't know. This is just so, like, amazing. And they get stuck. That surprise, deer in the headlights, don't know what to do, prefrontal cortex not working. So preparing our children, and I think what's important for us to say to our children is that attraction is normal, but what you choose to do after that makes all the difference. Because it's not sinful or wrong to think someone's pretty. It's part of your neurological makeup. But what you do with that feeling is very important. And then also preparing them for people asking them for nudes, what to do. You know, there was a situation with a girl who, there's a court case right now where her boyfriend asked her 56 times for nudes. And on the 57th time, she sent him a video. They went through a messy breakup, and he not only shared that video with all his friends, he uploaded it to Pornhub and tagged Cape Town, where she lived, and her full name. And so she is now fighting a losing battle because once it gets pulled down off one site, it pops up on another site, and she's changed her name already, legally changed her name, but Emma Stadler is a lawyer and going through a court case with her. But to remind our children that once content is out there, it's out there forever, and there's nothing they can do about it, and it will follow them forever. Talk to them about the law, talk to them about the billboard test, if they wouldn't mind it up there, then it's okay. But just prepare them for all of those things. Talk to them about catfishing. Talk to them about the fact that if they haven't seen someone with their eyes, they don't know who that person is. People are clever. Sexual predators are clever. So they need to know who they're talking to report immediately. I mean, the one boy who I helped, this happened to him, and he didn't report it immediately. He literally emptied his bank account paying these people, and then they carried on threatening him. So he handed over his Instagram login details to them. So they locked him out of his Instagram, and he had no more money and nothing else to do. Then he went to his mom. But tell your kids that no matter how dumb they are, no matter what goes wrong, you will be there for them. Because so many kids don't go to their parents because they just say, "No, ma'am, my mother would kill me, take away my phone, and then make sure I'm dead." That would be her response. So our children need to know that we will be there for them. So this is my fourth point, is that we are their safe place and their way out. Tell your children that you can blame. I always tell my children, blame me for your good behavior. Say to them, "Oh, my mom's so unreasonable. She won't let me have Snapchat. Oh, my mom's so unreasonable. She checks my phone. Please don't send me stuff. My mom checks my phone. Just, you can use me. I don't mind. Like, I'll be your cop out if you need me to." But also be the person that they can come to when things go wrong, and the person that will talk about anything with them. Probably the best compliment I've ever got about my little book about sex is, once you talk about sex, you can talk about anything. So break those conversations open. Be that person that, even if you, I mean, let's get real here for one second. When my daughter came home from grade 8 one day, she said to me, "Mom, do you know that some boys let girls kiss their private parts?" And I was like, you know, I always say to people, you think the birds and the bees conversation's hard. You ain't seen nothing yet. Okay? And but I'd practiced my chat face for many years. So what was going on in here was not reflected here. And that needs to be the case for us. We can't run and hide, pretend these conversations don't exist. So I answered her, and we had a conversation about it. We need to be the safe place so that our children don't go to Siri, they come to us. And then also to talk to them about when things go wrong. And like I'd done with Blake, is shut it down, run away, tell a trusted adult, or tell someone you trust. Give them strategies. Little kids, if you have little kids, give them, do role play with them in terms of seeing something shocking on a screen, running to mom, and then showing mom. Because sometimes those concepts are hard for them. And talk to them that about their scary stuff online. Talked, obviously age appropriate. And then also, if your child has been exposed to pornography, please don't ignore it. Because it has impacted them in some way. It will impact them in some way. And so, I like what, just very briefly again, we don't have a lot of time to go into this, but if they've been exposed, ask for the context. Is it once? Is it many times? How did it happen? And not in a police questioning kind of way. Ask them to tell the story to you of how they were exposed to pornography. How much have they consumed? Were they forced? Did they go? Were they curious? How did it happen? Then show concern for them. Because it's not about the act. It's not about the thing. It's about them. Are they okay? How do they feel? How did the images make them feel? How do they feel now? Do they think about going to look at them again? Do they need, like what I often will say to my boys is, do you need help? Because often it's easier for a boy to say, yeah, I need help, than, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. You know? And then consequences. What do we need to do to keep you safe? Do we need to change some stuff about your digital life, about what apps you're using, and make it about journeying with that child to make sure that they're okay? Because remember, it's about connection. It's about maintaining that connection with your child. So just to wrap things up in terms of the sexual content online is that I encourage all teenagers, and this is what I would encourage your teenagers as well, just to steer clear of all sexual content online. Even if it's, and if they have, if they're boys and they have girls on Instagram who pose in those tiny bikinis where you don't know where the front and the back is, you know, because they're the same size, in their little outside showers, don't follow those girls on Instagram. And for the girls, you know, those boys who do the gym selfies with their pants that are like, can your pants get any lower than that? And they're like, don't follow those guys. Like, if it's content that's going to be, if it's kind of sexual content, rather follow other people. So empower our children to just make good choices around what they watch, what they see, talk to them about the risks and dangers. And parents, I just encourage you, avoid porn at all costs. If we want to raise a porn-free generation, they need to grow up in porn-free homes. Porn is not good for your marriage, not good for your sex life, not good for your stress. It's not good for anything. So as parents, if we need help overcoming porn consumption, porn addiction, you guys are in a good place because there are groups in this church that will help you. But we need to make sure, because so many of the children I know who stumble across porn stumble upon it on their dad's phone. And so they're actually exposed within their homes. Make sure that our children know the danger of digital content, what they put out there, what they are allowing in. Remind them that what they allow in will shape them. In some way, we can't consume something without it shaping us in some way, and it will shape us into the adults that we become. Envision our children around sex. Talk to them about the good version, about the beautiful version, that sex is great, that sex worth protecting, that it's something that we don't want to watch on a screen, because sex doesn't belong on a screen. It belongs in a marriage. And it's so good in a marriage. So remember that we don't want to just all be about don't. We want to be like, do. And these are some of the things. And then I just want to share this with you because it's just a good encouragement. Can you put the next slide up, please? I think it's the next one. So this is from Jonathan Haidt's book, and this is the movement that he's begun, and this is his call to us as a generation of parents from an expert who has done all the research. And he says this: no phones till high school. No social media until 16. Phone-free schools and more offline freedom to build confidence and resilience. And so if you're a parent of small children, this is my encouragement to you. As I said, I gave my children social media before 16, and I've decided to make an adjustment based on, because these guys are clever, and they know what they're talking about. And honestly, a lot of the teenagers that I talk to, if I say to them, do you wish you didn't have TikTok? A lot of them are like, no, because my friends are on TikTok. And I say, do you wish no one had TikTok? They'll be like, yes, I wish that was true. I wish there was no TikTok. So we can be part of the movement to change things. But in this space, I just encourage you, be present, be engaged, put on the brakes, don't give access too soon, and make sure that you journey with your children through this.